Blink, you also wanted to point something out that we haven't discussed too much during the debate. What do you want to share with us? Blink?
Yes. You know, I really was a bit disturbed as Donald Trump was describing, you know, the inner city and African Americans, that we are literally living in hell, you know, in our communities.
Uh-huh.
And I, of course, I do agree that there are innocent people that are being shot and murdered. But if you understand the inner city, you also would know that many of the shootings are happening because of gangs and violations. Many of people that are buying drugs, stealing drugs, and there's a punishment that they pay. And yes, there's random shooting at times, trying to, you know, bring a person that's violated gang rules or whatever.
Right, territory. You know, there's also a lot of street justice. A lot of people, you know, what I've been told is that block justice, you know, retaliation for slights and things like that, too, are escalating.
Absolutely. But when you are recommending that there's a, you know, frisk and search, for that to be reinstated, because that will really bring down, you know, the number of murders. It is frightening, because what we're experiencing right now in our nation, where so many African Americans have a distrust for police officers, this would only widen the gap. It would increase racial profiling. I mean, you've got to look at it like, you know, what would be the criteria for a search? Mm-hmm. It would literally be all subjective.
Right.
And to me, it would only increase the number of senseless murders. And you've got to understand the under-resourced communities that we have in our inner cities. I live in the inner city. I mean, sociologists call it the ghetto, but since we live there, we call it home. And we have to deal with all the realities, and many have to climb their way out. Well, there are a number of African-Americans that have done that. And to be generalized, you know, and
right.
and to
and dismissed,
think that
pretty much.
We really are, in, you know, he has won the African-American vote. That's far, far from it, because the racism just spilled out through the way he answered many of the questions tonight.
I felt their answers did not reflect what needs to happen in so many communities that are disadvantaged socially with education. And in particular, when he's going to point out Chicago, you know, we're talking about Englewood, we're talking about Roseland, we're talking about neighborhoods that have been institutionally, you know, divided from the rest of the city. That it's ingrained.
I think he showed a complete lack of understanding of what goes on in the inner cities in black communities. I don't think he spent more than 5 minutes in a black community his entire life.
Right.
I really don't believe he has. Anybody who has had a wonderful opportunity, as I have had, to travel in inner cities across the country would be struck by how vibrant they are. There's so much love and community. You know, I actually have felt more at home in the inner city than I have in the white suburbs, to be honest with you. Just incredible
Absolutely.
Togetherness, and it's wonderful. And Trump talks about them as if it's a third world country.
Exactly.
It's extraordinary.
Link, how do you feel when Donald Trump describes your community as hell?
Well, it is absolutely disrespectful, because and Hillary actually scored, to me, I believe, a real point with African-Americans as she was able to talk about the churches and the community organizations. And many of the good things that are happening there. There are a lot of people. I'm actually from Jacksonville, Florida. I moved into the inner city for ministry. I've been there now 27 years. And I did it because I wanted to respond to an overlooked mission field. A lot of churches are sending millions of dollars overseas, and I'm not understanding that if we can really focus on some of the ills that are happening in our inner cities, we will come up with solutions for suburban ills that are going to happen tomorrow. It was at one time drugs was absolutely devastating inner city areas. Now drugs are devastating suburban areas. Well, we have learned some solution to drug problems, you know, in the inner city, and it can become preventive in suburban areas. There are so many good things happening there, and have it classified as hell when I really see it as actually being an antidote for some of the ills other areas are going to soon face. It was completely disrespectful. And I can tell you, I'm conservative. I have voted Republican a number of times. And that's because of my faith. But I can tell you, I know that I will be making a vote this term, and I'll probably repent after I vote. But I guarantee you, it is impossible to vote someone who is so out of touch with reality. And I consider Trump to be kind of unconsciously incompetent. I don't mean that disrespectfully. He just does not know what he does not know. And there are a lot of people that are in that same position. You can't know until you really get there, get alongside of some of the people that are trying to do good in these communities and learn some of the things that can actually change it. And broad swipes, generalizations, all these things just widen the gap, you know, with the you know, the division that we have.
Did you want to see the mask in? No?
I don't think I've heard it said better.
Thank you so much, Link. You have a great night. We'll talk to you again soon, okay?
Thank you very much, too.
Oh, man, it is Monday night, Monday, September 26th. Is it 26th yet, Dave Lundy?
It is definitely the 26th. Today is the day I've been waiting for months.
Well, Dave Lundy is joining us as one of our political experts, our panelists, our correspondents. And we also have Scott Stantis, the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune.
Yeah, tonight was my idea of fun.
And, you sound so angry. And new to our show, we welcome Ken Jakubowski, who is also, like Dave Lundy, a political analyst and communications expert.
And very relieved tonight. Relieved.
Yeah, we're all relieved. We on the Democratic side are very relieved.
Were you worried about some implosion?
No, I think we were worried that you just didn't know which Hillary was going to show up and which Donald was going to show up. And the best Hillary showed up and the worst Donald showed up. It was
sniffly,
a great combination.
Sniffly, thirsty, rude Donald showed up tonight.
That was such a great thing you wrote. Yes.
Every time he sniffled, I was like, I can just imagine snot like just rolling down his face.
Oh, there's part of me thinking, was he on coke? I mean, seriously, he's like a... And so
okay, the Republican said it. I only thought it.
No, someone tweeted
it out.
Some tweeted out he was sniffling like he could tell even his own BS smelled that bad. Ken, what did you think about, like, that's a physical thing, right? Was that something that you take into account? Do you think people are watching that kind of a moment or the whole time?
Yes, I think so. I think they notice everything from her red dress to the fact that he wore a lapel of the American flag and she didn't have anything like that. I think people will notice that. But I think that was quickly forgotten, though, given the way in which this debate played out.
Yeah, but physical means a lot. Okay. And, you know, let me give you one example that will make my Democratic friends here cringe. Remember that?
You heard more of the exhale than the inhale, I think, on Gore. I've watched
Lock that. Box.
I just watched that again this weekend.
It matters. It's stupid. It's ridiculous. It's small, but it resonates with people for whatever reason.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if Gore was bad in 2000 against Bush, this was Gore on steroids. I mean, Trump's reactions, what he didn't realize, and this is what happens when you don't prepare, when you don't do the mock debates, when you don't stand there and let yourself get insulted over and over and over again to your face. You're not prepared for that. And you could tell about 5 minutes into it, Trump like lost his mind and he never got it back.
Scott Stantis asked me before the show what I thought who won or lost, and I don't think that anything was gained is the way I felt. But let's see what Richard has to say, because Richard wanted to join the conversation about the lack of a third candidate on that stage. Hey, Richard, how are you doing?
Hey, Patty. Even though I don't always agree with you, I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
The first thing I want to say is, it's too bad that we ain't got a third party with like a Colin Powell and a Condoleezza Rice, who are really more independent than they are either party. Because if that would be so, we would not be talking about Hillary and Trump.
You know,
it would be
so. Hey, Richard, there is a third party candidate here. His name is Gary Johnson. He's running with William Weld. He's on the Libertarian ticket. He's polling at between 8% and 12%. He should have been on the stage tonight, quite frankly. And because they put up these, to say it's a nonpartisan presidential debate commission is hogwash. It's bipartisan. Those are the people who pay for it. So there is definitely a viable third party choice and someone else you can vote for with a clear conscience.
His name is Gary. What is Aleppo Johnson?
Yeah, because Hillary's never screwed up or lied to us or Trump certainly has never lied to us or screwed up.
Richard would like to say something.
Don't, both the Democrats and the Republicans, they both know by their candidates they got to rebuild their parties because both are pathetic this time around.
Well, Richard, and I'm
independent. I don't know which way I'm going to go.
No, but I would ask this, and I would ask this of Ken because I know he's worked on a lot of campaigns. Where are the independents? We only talk about it now. This is the only time anybody says we need a third party. But in between, in those 3 years when nothing else is happening, where are the third party people?
The problem is they're all hibernating.
Exactly.
Well, I think that's right.
I mean, it's sad because I'll tell you what, right now would have been the perfect election for a decent third party candidate, someone with some name recognition to be up there and saying, hey, look at us.
Yeah, hold on one second.
No.
One second, Richard. Why not use the momentum of whenever a candidate is running a third party, they just go away.
But the way the system is set up, it's completely stacked against a third party candidate. Some would say that Bernie Sanders was actually a third party candidate who just jumped on the Democratic bandwagon because it's much easier.
Right. Could he have generated that much momentum had he run as a third party candidate?
No.
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 There you go. Sorry, Richard.
Well, and the other point I just want to make in response to Scott about the debates, look, as somebody who has planned debates both from an organizer's perspective and a candidate's perspective, having a minimum threshold on a percentage in the polls you need to have in order to qualify for debate makes sense. Otherwise, you're going to let everybody. I mean, there are candidates from like the Reform Party and the Constitutional Party.
No, you're wrong on that, and I'll tell you why.
Why am I wrong?
Well, first off, Gary Johnson's going to be on all 50 ballots, A. Two, he's polling at between 8 and 10%. What was Ross Perot at in 1992?
In 1992, he got 20% of the vote.
Why? Because he was on the debates.
Before
the debate, he was at 7%.
Yes.
And the fact
you're wrong, because before the Democratic Convention, before he dropped out the first time,
right,
he was at 42% and he was winning.
Right, and then he dropped out, and then when he came back, he was polling at 7%.
And they still let him in.
The fact is, he comes back and he wins 20% of the vote because he was included in those debates. And the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, have colluded to make sure that never happens again.
No, he won 20% of the vote because he was a credible candidate, and he came across he actually came across pretty well, which is why he was winning at a certain point before he dropped out.
Because
of the craziness about his daughter's wedding. But look, I hate to tell you this, Gary Johnson is doing poorly right now because every time he has an opportunity, he says something unbelievably stupid, whether it's what is Aleppo, which, by the way, it's not about saying something stupid, it's about demonstrating a lack of curiosity about what is going on in the world, or what he said the other day, which is, you know, we should have more coal plants because global warming doesn't mean anything because at the end of the day, the earth is going to be engulfed by the sun. I'm sorry. If Bill Weld was on top of that ticket instead of a number two, they would be getting 15% and they'd be in the debates. Gary Johnson has blown it every single chance he's gotten.
I think he's under a lot of scrutiny, and I think that both parties, because he's siphoning off votes from both sides, is the Aleppo mistake, and he readily admits. I mean, in fact, I thought his response the next day was so contrary to both major party candidates when he says, you know, it's just, you know, I just proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that I'm a human being. You will never hear Hillary say that.
It's
not a cop-out. It's an admission that he screwed up.
But he didn't screw up. He has no intellectual curiosity about the world. I'm sorry. Everybody here knows what Aleppo is. You know
now
what Aleppo is.
Now I do,
is.
Only because of
you
that.
You know what Aleppo is.
I doubt that. I would bet if I handed you an unmarked map, you could point to it. I doubt that.
I can't even. I'd have trouble with some of the states, especially the small ones like New Hampshire and Massachusetts. I almost said Boston. That's how bad I am. We have Mike on the line who wanted to say something about the moderator tonight. Mike, I'm reading this, and I want to make sure that this is what you're saying. Yeah, what did you think about Lester Holt tonight?
I actually thought he did a really good job. First of all, I'm a political junkie, so I'm just in absolute heaven tonight, and it's great listening to you guys. I thought he did a really good job. He let them talk.
Did you see the first 10 minutes?
Yeah, but you know what? I thought it was good that he was letting Trump interrupt her. I think that was an important fact. I think that allows people to see
the kind of person
he
is.
I agree with Mike, and not just because he's a friend of mine, but I actually agree with Mike. I thought that, we were in the green room watching this, Patty, you, me, and Roebling and Justin. And at first we're like, where's Lester?
Right.
But then I realized it was perfect because he was allowing Trump and Clinton to show themselves. I thought it was great.
And I thought it was great for her, quite frankly, for two reasons. Firstly, because he looked terrible. He looked like the numbskull bully that he is. And second, she looked in control in a way that I think was extremely nuanced. And it will probably be lost the most because it wasn't spectacular. But she drove that conversation and in a very subtle way. And she kept later in the debate, she just was like, playing with a dog over on the other side of the fence, you know, just showing him the meat and he barked like a maniac. I thought it was,
Ken does not seem to.
During the debate, I was very frustrated with the constant interruptions. And I kept saying Holtz lost control of the debate. But then I would think, well, what are you going to do? How do you stop Donald Trump? Then I kind of came around to where, you know, to these guys, where these guys are. I think he just let him go. And by letting him go, we probably saw more than Trump and certainly his campaign team wanted us to see.
Esmeralda, you had an excellent point about what Lester Holt should have in front of him.
Turn his mic off.
Yeah, turn the mic.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking that too.
I kept thinking about that. There's got to be a switch you can just press and that's it. He loses.
When there's a major showcase in a comedy club, and I've seen this happen at Zany's, where you get 6 minutes, right? And Bert will sometimes let you go maybe 30 seconds over, but at about 6:35, your mic is off and you've now just embarrassed yourself in front of whoever was booking, whoever was auditioning you. And it would be great to see him with no mic just mouthing off. Would have been great to see.
Well, I will tell you something. In the next debate where Martha Raddatz and Anderson Cooper are moderating, it's the town hall format, mm-hmm. I promise you they are not going to let that go.
Is the next one town hall and then the last one is that they
correct.
Sit at the desk?
Yeah, okay. the next one's town hall and then it's the one that Chris Wallace is going to be moderating as the last one. But Martha Raddatz and Anderson Cooper both are brutal moderators. They're really good.
I'm looking forward to it. More about the debate. Thank you so much for joining us, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
By the way, my husband says he likes you. Not sure about Scott yet. You're listening pretty late, and we are in the thick of our post-debate coverage, the very first presidential debate. And by the way, we're going to get to all the points that my correspondents want to get to. I want to make sure we also get to our listeners. You can call or text us, 312-981-7200. We were talking about Lester Holt before the break. Ricky, what did you think?
Yeah, hi. I want to say that it didn't bother me that Holt didn't control Trump regarding interrupting Hillary. What bothered me was that Trump was so disrespectful towards Holt. I just thought he ran roughshod over Holt, and Holt didn't seem to be able to stop him.
That Trump was talking over Hillary, interrupting her repeatedly, just being snarky while she was talking, and then Lester Holt asked, do you have anything to say about racism? And he goes, I do not. I'm not going to say anything. And that was bizarre to say. That was what that entire sequence of questions was about.
Yeah, at the end of the when Ro Khan came on Justin's show in the last hour, and he played that segment of audio tape where it was just unbelievable. Because Holt was trying to say, do you have anything to say to African-Americans who would be upset that you accused the first? And he couldn't get it out. He got a few words out. And then Trump said, it came out as, do you have anything to say to African-Americans? And Trump said, no, I don't.
Yeah.
And it was like,
it's very
strange. There are a number of things from tonight that are going to come back to bite Trump in the rear end. One of which is about his claim that not paying income taxes is good business.
That he was smart.
It was smart.
It was smart. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ricky.
I was going to say, thank you, Ricky. I thought the most hurtful thing he said tonight was, besides that, I think more so was when Hillary brought up the stiffing the contractors, people he had, you know, had helped him build, and he goes, and she said, you stiffed him. And he says, that's called business. It's like, really?
Yeah, no, that's not called
business. That's not called business. That's called stealing. That's called bilking somebody.
Well, and interestingly, so the Hillary campaign released a video of the Miss Universe contestant during the end of the debate after Trump said, no, what you're saying isn't true. And it's this whole interview about 2 minutes long of the Miss Universe contestant saying that Trump called her a pig and he called her fat and he made fun of her and he called her a housekeeper. And guess who's going to be the new network media star over the course of the next couple of days?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I remember when that actually happened and he had her on some television show trying to lose weight. They filmed her running on the beach. as she was trying to sweat through. He kept saying she's got to sweat through and lose another 15 or 20 pounds. She's lost her beauty. It was pretty demeaning for her.
So the man who weighed 267 pounds tonight.
A couple of general thoughts on tonight. I think from a thematic perspective, it was clear that throughout the entire debate, Hillary spoke to people, and she spoke about them. Trump spoke about himself and defended himself, including attack ads that he didn't like, which I thought was very odd. And I'm very curious to see how one issue alone might affect what we might see in the polls in the next week. And that is, you've talked about Gary Johnson. With millennials in Colorado, for example, he's polling 24%, which is astounding. Ugh. The big issue there is climate change. And Trump did everything he possibly could tonight for anybody who's concerned about that issue to push them away. And so I'm curious to see if people are going to move away from Johnson and move back more towards Hillary on that issue alone. We'll see as this kind of goes in the next few days. But that he made it very clear his views on climate change.
Yeah, it was a little dismissive. And you know, there were tweets that he had put out years ago that were about how, you know, it was a hoax and it was created by China, that it's not really a thing. And people were obviously retweeting those tonight. More when we come back on 720 WGN. We're doing our post-debate wrap-up. You can join the conversation anytime. Call or text us at 312-981-7200. It's pretty late. We are hanging out in the Allstate Showcase studio with our post-debate wrap-up with our experts, our panel of correspondents. We have joining us communication experts and political analysts. I'm just lumping you both in together because Ken Jakubowski told me that he could just be lumped in with Dave Lundy. I hope that's okay with you, Dave Lundy.
I'm a little disturbed by that, frankly.
Don't be disturbed. Thank you so much for coming tonight. I know this is, I threw you into this, we had fun. I should have invited him to watch earlier with us in the green room. Poor Justin Coffin was like walking around. He couldn't sit still. He kept flinching.
He was flinching not as much as Donald Trump was. Though.
That's true. That's true.
I was so nervous for this debate that I really needed to be by myself. I couldn't believe Bill Clinton sat in the audience. He never does that.
Oh, really?
He always goes backstage. He gets too nervous. He gets frustrated. He yells.
Did you see them after the debate, the post-debate? First off, neither family, you know, usually the families mix and, mm-hmm. Oh, no.
No.
Afterwards?
Oh, and Clinton was talking to someone just like, he was getting ticked. He's that bony finger of his. And
well, that initial handshake with Bill Clinton and Melania? Yeah. When they shook hands and they walked past each other, it was also very icy. It was very crazy.
Well,
the very
you know,
beginning.
This is
and he was at a wedding.
He attended
the Trump wedding.
Got paid well.
Well,
for
they knew that you know the well, Donald did not have a good.
In the post debate green room, mm-hmm. Trump said he went back to what he was alluding to in his what turned out to be his close about what he didn't want to say. He didn't want to go there, and he mentioned it. It was bringing up Bill and the infidelities. He said, maybe I'll have to do that next time.
Well, yeah. And he said that, I read this, he said that he didn't do it because he was being respectful to Chelsea.
Correct.
So I'm not going to say it,
but I'll
just
say it later.
I'm just going to apply the heck out of it.
Over and over
well,
and
me,
over again.
Let me ask you guys, because you guys actually work on campaigns, and it sounds like a long explanation. It's going to be very short. There's a great TV sitcom that only lasted two seasons called Better Off Ted. And he's trying to teach mentoring. One woman is trying to mentor another one on how to be a manager. And he said, they listen to the tone. They don't hear the words. So she's talking to them and not using phony words. And they're going, what? She goes, listen to my tone, not to my words. And my point is tonight, did Trump win? Not with his words, because he has the vocabulary of an eighth grader, but did he win any points with his mood, with his with the presence, with
rolling his eyes at her,
just looking down at her, using the words he's used so many times before? Did he win by people listening to his tone and not his words?
No, absolutely not. I think what we've heard from the callers, they picked up on how disrespectful he was, not only to Lester Holt, but to her. And about 15, 20 minutes in, I thought, is he going to do this throughout the entire debate? Just interrupt and interrupt? And he did. I think he set a record within the first 15 minutes for any debate I've ever seen. And I'm going back to maybe 72, I think, the first debate I saw. I've never seen anybody interrupt someone.
76 was your first, because there wasn't one.
Was there one in 72?
There was
I know
not.
76 was
Carter and Ford.
And
then
Ford,
the one before that was Nixon and Kennedy.
Nixon and Kennedy, that's right.
Yes. 76, of course, was the no Soviet occupation, domination of Poland.
Of Poland, yeah. That was the killer. Yeah. But it was, I was astounded.
Of lost audio, if you remember that.
I was astounded by the level of disrespect. And it was heartening for me, at least, to hear in the callers and what we've seen in the polls that have come out after the debate as to how many other people actually really noticed and focused on that.
There's a poll right now that asks, were Trump's attacks fair? 58% of men said yes. 44% of men said of women said no. Wait, 44% yes, women. 58% of men said yes. Those attacks from Trump against Clinton were fair.
Yeah, I think that I'm not sure that that's the right way to ask the question. I think that and I'm sure pollsters are going to be working on this, and focus groups are going to be done asking women, how did you feel about tonight's debate? How did you feel about Donald Trump before and after the debate? I think that Donald Trump did what the Clinton people were praying he was going to do tonight, which is to be domineering, to be rude, to be disrespectful, to really angering on a gender basis. And I think women are going to react negatively to this. Now, I'm not a woman. I don't play one on TV, but, you know.
Here's Myrna. Myrna, what did you think of tonight's debate?
I was disappointed in Lester Holt. I thought he should have taken more control.
I'm with you. That's how I felt, but everyone else here seems to disagree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Esmeralda said, you know, cut the mic. That's all you got to do. Shut him up and that's it. But same time, she was quiet while he interrupted, and she allowed him to show his even more ignorant side than usual. And you can't deny he's just ignorant. That's all there is to it.
Myrna, I think the takeaway, too, is that she played him like it was a really masterful performance. I mean, it wasn't devastating. It wasn't like a knockout, but she was terrific in terms of pushing his buttons. And it just, as the debate dragged on, she was doing it more and more.
Well, she baited him. I mean, that's when about 10 minutes into the debate, I knew we were going to have a good night because Donald Trump was rising.
What's this?
We, the pro-Clinton types, knew we were going to have a good night because, like Ken, I was very anxious about tonight. I just didn't know how this was going to go. And Donald Trump, I expected to show up composed. I expected him to show up low-key. I thought he'd be kind of like the Donald Trump on Xanax. Instead, he was like the Donald Trump on Coke. He was just like so jazzed up. You just couldn't stop him.
It was weird.
It was weird, and I go back to saying, this is what happens when you don't prepare, when you think you're too smart and you don't need to, because there is something that happens when you're standing in a room playing opposite somebody who is doing their best to intimidate you and attack you and get under your skin that prepares you for that moment. Hillary clearly had done that.
Yeah, she looked at the tapes. She watched the film.
Absolutely.
Well, I think it started very early on when she mentioned the fact that he started his business with a $14 million loan from his father. It wasn't 14. It was one. I think she said 14 to get him. He didn't go for the number. Instead, he just went right into defending it.
Yeah, there were some weird moments like that.
I think she said a few things purposefully
to bait him,
to get him to talk about that point. I think she would have loved to have heard him say, I didn't start it with a $14 million loan. It was only a $1 million loan, just a small amount of money.
Most people did say it was a small amount of money.
Yeah.
He said, no, that's not true. I started with a small loan from my father. And I'm sorry, but a small loan is not usually considered what in today's dollars would be $14
million. Correct.
That's, by the way, what she meant by that.
Thank you for joining us, Myrna. Have a great night.
Wait, Patty, one thing?
Yes, go ahead.
I wanted to mention, he's always talking about China and jobs, bringing them back to the U.S. and everything. Today he was attacking Mexico, all the jobs going to Mexico. Something that no one seems to bring up at all, and I wish they would on one of these debates, is his clothing line is manufactured in three different countries, including China and Mexico. His daughter's clothing line and accessories, 80% of them are made overseas as well. Is he going to bring back those jobs to the U.S.?
Right.
Is he referring to those jobs also?
That are
And the minimum wage in New York City, he could have it established there. Minimum wage in New York City is $9.75. It's not a lot.
Right.
So is he going to bring those jobs back?
Right. What is he doing to reflect the policies he says he will incorporate?
And I think he was asked about that during at least one of the Republican debates. And I think his response was, well, you just don't understand business. That was good business for himself. But
Well, he said that, and tonight, I mean, he was asked that question repeatedly. Well, I know, but Mr. Trump, my question is, what would you do to bring those jobs back? And he finally, when he came up with an answer, his answer was, well, we're going to put an import tariff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, no, that's not going to actually bring jobs back. It was a terrible answer. But frankly, her answer was equally bad.
Right.
And so I thought it was a missed opportunity for her. Interesting point, by the way. Mike, the caller we previously had on, just sent me an image of the latest from this CNN poll. It said the question was, who did the debate make you more likely to vote for? Clinton, 34%. Trump, 18%. Neither, 47%.
Neither.
Wow.
Neither.
Doors wide open for Gary Johnson.
Well, but going into tonight, based on the Washington Post poll, which came out yesterday, there are 18% of people who said that their vote would definitely be impacted by the debates.
Really?
She doesn't need to get 5 or 10.
Right.
She just needs to move the needle 1, 2, 3 points, and it's over.
And in particular, in certain parts of the country, though, whether it's Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, places like that. Myrna, thank you so much for calling. Chris, we're going to take your call right when we get back on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me for our post-debate coverage is our brand new friend, Ken Jakubowski, and he is a communications expert and political analyst, as is Dave Lundy, who joined us as well, and Scott Stantis, the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. Before I get to, I guess there's a little bit of, there's some topics that you guys want to touch on, but first let me talk to Chris, and then we'll jump on what you guys want to talk about. I guess saying favorable things about Donald Trump, but Chris, what did you want to say?
Hey, Patty. Good evening, everyone.
Hello.
First thing I want to say about Trump was that...
Oh, no. Okay, Chris. The first time he did it, I was like, ah! And now I'm going to have to ask you this, Tom, because I know we did it already. I know. Sorry.
Sniffles the
cup. Now I know how much it hurts. Yes.
I think he's a juvenile, narcissistic a-hole that Hillary just pantsed him tonight and let everybody see what a bully. And like she said, can you actually see him as a president? Can you see him sitting with other leaders of other nations? And as they're talking, he's going to just go, sorry, no, didn't happen. No, that's a lie. It's hysterical. He's just entertainment is all he is.
I agree.
Hillary, mm-hmm. Hillary will probably win because I'll vote for her because she has the experience. But this fool, it's like a reality show for him. If he doesn't win, oh, well, he'll go do something else. He doesn't care.
Well, Chris, let's see what I know that Ken and Scott had some positive points to make about.
Well, and it's this point, Chris, thank you so much. And you actually play into what my point is that as bad as we're all saying his performance was tonight, what have we just been talking about for almost an hour? Is Donald Trump.
Right.
We have not been talking about Hillary other than, you know, she played him. She threw out the red meat, all that stuff. But we've been talking about Donald Trump for almost this entire hour. So I think
true.
That speaks to, yeah, he's an entertainer and he knows what strings to pull, and he's emotional. He's not intellectual, and he, you know, listened to his tone, not to his words.
Well, I too, early on in the debate, wrote down in my notes, in fact, it was at the 22-minute mark, trying to bluster and bully her. It was physically, and of course, with the, he was speaking much louder than she was, mm-hmm. and of course, all of the interruptions. But you have to give him credit for one thing. His best time in the debate tonight was on trade. That's a very strong issue for him. He seemed very passionate, very knowledgeable. We may disagree. Dave Lundy and I may disagree with some of the specifics, but that's a very weak point for the Democratic Party right now. And she did her best, but it wasn't that good, and I don't think it's going to get any better going forward. I mean, that's just a weak point.
Well, that's what I was talking about, not luring anybody to her side. I mean, she didn't do anything to alienate anybody who was on the fence, but she certainly didn't lure anybody who doesn't know what they want to do.
No, I think that
lure.
She...
Well, they have to be lured.
Look, I think she had she started to lay out a vision. I don't think she did the complete vision thing tonight, mm-hmm. But she had moments where she did that. I think her weakest moment though was on this jobs issue, because frankly she's got a pretty good plan and she's got some pretty good ideas, and she just didn't articulate them. And I don't know if she was having a brain fart, Maybe she was distracted by all the sniffing coming from the side. But it was not her best moment, and she's got two more debates. She's got to do a better job of articulating that vision for the future. I think that you have to look at these debates as a series. You can't just it's like a baseball playoff series. And by the way, Cubs 100 games tonight. But you have to look at it like a playoff series. You want to win the series. And so tonight was about establishing that Donald Trump could not stand on the stage with her without, you know, getting rattled. And he was rattled tonight.
Well,
I think that the next one she'll have a better chance when it's the real people, the town hall format, to articulate her vision.
Yeah, but I don't think you think of them as a series. And here's why, because historically they haven't. Carter and Ford had three debates. The takeaway from that was Poland's not in the sphere of Soviet influence. There was a series of debates in 92. The takeaway, George H.W. Bush looking at his watch
right.
and not giving during the town hall. So I think there will be a moment when it all comes. There's that one
that
moment that will be definitive.
We have 2 minutes, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay. That was it.
But Scott, you still have 98 seconds.
Freeform here.
I think one of the issues that she dealt with tonight, and I thought she at times struggled with it, was there's just so much that you could tell she wanted to come at Trump. So many different things she wanted to raise. And at times, I think it threw her off. She kept searching for these one-liners to bring up things that he had said. When she got away from that, I think she was at her strongest point. And I think the commander-in-chief and temperament answer was her best of the evening.
Well, unless my guests want to stay past midnight, we'll wrap up with them in just a moment. Unless they want to stay, you're welcome to stay. We've got music coming up in just a little bit on Pretty Little Patty.